Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Root Awakening, a health podcast. My name is Emily Kosick. I am emilys.rootawakening on Instagram. Root is spelled R-O-O-T, and I'm an intuitive health coach. I help people transform their mindset so they can attract better health and they can evolve the way that the world shows up for them and they can go after their dreams and actually get their dreams and start living their dreams. Yes, all of that can be achieved through mindset. I help people achieve food freedom so they can eat whatever they want and still gain more and more health along the way. I hope you enjoy this episode, and there are several ways to work with me if you decide to. I have a couple of courses. These are online coaching courses that also come with a chat so you can ask questions along the way. I have a confidence course that basically teaches you how to get stuff done and how to take action on stuff that you're nervous about, maybe how to talk to people that make you nervous, how to put yourself in uncomfortable situations, but uncomfortable situations that will lead to your growth. And I've really used this step-by-step confidence process to get stuff done in my life, to start this business, to make big leaps in my self-development process. And I also have a course called Manifestation Exploration. And that's a course on how to manifest. It's a 6-step manifestation process. It's simple. It's workable for the rest of your life. It can fit in any context. So anything that you want in your life, you can use this step-by-step process to achieve. So information on all of that is in the show notes. And if you would like to work with me one-to-one, which is what I do from time to time, you can email me, you can DM me on Instagram. Again, that information is in the show notes. I would love to work with you one-to-one, and I would also love to have you in my online programs, and I would love to speak with you there. If you have any questions, just let me know. Enjoy this episode.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Root Awakening, a health podcast. Today, I am with Teresa Piela. Teresa came on this podcast, we think, about a year ago or a little bit less than a year ago, last year, to talk about her experience with health and food and her journey with like food freedom and how she healed her body with EFT tapping. And I will link that episode in the show notes. If you guys, you really should listen to it if you haven't already. It's a great episode. But Teresa is an EFT practitioner and she specializes in chronic illness and early life trauma. We're going to get into some topics that we haven't yet gotten into today. And I was really astounded when I initially saw Teresa online. I came across her content on like my homepage and Instagram like years ago in 2020, I think. And I was like really shocked that someone could heal physical imbalances with EFT as part of their like healing practice. And I was familiar with EFT at the time, and maybe that's why I found your work, Teresa, but I was also trying to heal my own health stuff. I still had a lot of health imbalances back then, and I was like, whoa, she like Candida kind of like went away. I'm sure you have a more detailed explanation of this, but in my view, it was like her Candida kind of went away in her journey like with food freedom, and that's kind of like intertwined simultaneously. And I had a really big issue with Candida, and actually it's cured now. So the last time we talked, it was not, it's cured now. And it was also a very mental thing, I realized, for me as well. So Teresa like really inspired that. Like, I really do think you were the seed for that, because I went to so many practitioners and like did so many diets and it wasn't helping the issue. But like really when I started to heal, well, when I continued to heal the emotional stuff, it really balanced out. So she's just been like such an inspiring purpose in my life. And she's just a great person. She has a lot of great, like really, I think, cutting edge topics to talk about that concern the nervous system as it relates to the physical body. And just, yeah, there's a lot, she has a lot of knowledge. So Teresa Piela, welcome back to Root Awakening, a health podcast.
Thanks, Emily. I'm happy to be here. And now actually I'm so curious about your process, because I feel like we do have a lot of similarities in our journey of trying so many things, and especially maybe the more intense and No bullshit diets, with the hope and the dream that they'll be healing and that they'll resolve these issues. And I think both of us experienced maybe some relief, but not the complete resolution of symptoms that maybe other people have shared online or what we thought would be promised. So before we dive into other aspects, are you open to talking about some of the emotional stories or beliefs or anything that was holding you back that you actively rewired to then start to feel better physically?
Yeah, and really it is kind of simple in a way. So like the last diet I did was the raw meat diet, in like the raw primal diet, in hopes of like having painless periods. And basically I was having just like my quality of life really went down when I did that diet full on. And now I still like to eat raw meat once in a while, but just for like taste and enjoyment and like a good feeling in my body too. But it was like way too intense for my body. And I just remember thinking, I don't really care if I ever heal from my like, you know, painful periods. I don't want to have this lifestyle. There was just something in me that was like, this is not how you're going to live your life. This is not how you're going to like end your life on this earth. You know, like you're not going to end your life with this, like you're not going to finish out your life with this diet. There was just something in me that told me that. Stopped that, did this whole new, kind of redid this whole season of just eating what I wanted. And I just remember this was the biggest thing, the things that I tell my clients about how I've healed. And one of like the main pillars of that, I told myself, I declared that I needed to eat other types of food in order to be healthy. I needed to go outside of this diet in order to be healthy. So I told myself that again and again. And it was just this kind of big, like, decision that I made. No, I actually don't need a narrowed down diet to be healthy. I need all different types of foods in order to be healthy. That was like a big turning point for my body. So it took me time to get to catch up to that, to get used to that. But then all of a sudden I started having food tolerances that I wasn't having before. And in the meantime, I've always done a lot of journaling work for years and years and years on, I've just been continuously healing emotional stuff. And I would love to talk about, you know, your specialization with early life trauma, because we didn't talk about that too much on the first episode we've had together. But yeah, I've always been doing a lot of journaling work and self-development work. So that was a huge process, and realizing that I'm worthy of good health despite what I eat. That was a big one too. And then with the yeast infections, very interesting. I just realized that I didn't really have much symptoms for the yeast anymore. Like I was having vaginal yeast infections. I couldn't remember the last time I actually had physical symptoms of that. Yet here I was talking about how I was having chronic yeast issues still. I was still in this identity of having chronic yeast. And then I was talking with my friends about what normal anatomy looks like in that area, in the genital area. And I found out, oh my God, I'm totally normal. Like what I thought was yeast was not yeast. And there was just something in me that was like, oh my God, I don't have this anymore. So that was another claim. Like, hey, I actually don't have an issue with this anymore. And that was basically it, Teresa. Like, I mean, I will say this, I had a lot of antibiotics earlier in my life. I had it diagnosed by doctors that I had yeast infections, but I think after like my initial experience with like Ayurvedic herbs and just like changing my lifestyle, like, you know, baseline, just like not partying all the time and just getting the sleep I needed. And then just like having that initial herbal parasite cleanse, probably that took care of it. And I just like stuck with this, like this narrative, this identity after that. So honestly, I don't even know how long I've been cured, but it took all those mental tweaks and all those declarations that like, hey, I'm done with this dieting stuff. It took all of that to then realize that I don't have a problem with this anymore. That was basically, that was my experience with it in a nutshell, you know?
I love that though, because I think like many people, maybe people listening or other people you've met in this world, this interesting world of healing, do-it-yourself healing, people that are tired of seeing practitioners and doing protocols and not finding healing. I think so many people are still stuck in I'm sick, must fix, I'm sick, must do it this way, or it has to be really intense or hard, or else I'm not going to get the healing that I really want. And both you and I have discovered that actually it's the freedom and spaciousness that sends the signal of safety to the body, and things start working better. Like you said, the food tolerances start to come back when we actually feel more excited about what we're eating. Yes, there is a time and place, because we touched on this in the last episode. Yep. And part of my story that I shared was I literally got to the place where I could not eat really any plant-based food without having massive reactions. And a big piece of it was that I had such significant nerve damage in my GI tract that if I ate anything with fiber, it would get stuck inside the small intestine or in the colon and start fermenting. And I'd get these pretty extreme endotoxic flu-like reactions where, you know, even my vision would start to get blurry. Basically, it mimics being very drunk when the bacteria start to ferment, and all of the byproducts, all the toxins that they're creating, it creates acetaldehyde, which is an alcohol. So you feel just like you would if you had been drinking all day. So for part of my journey was actually, it was this peaceful awareness of, okay, I don't want to eat just meat for the rest of my life, but right now, the kindest thing I can do for my body is to limit the noise and the variables and give it a break. And I think it's that tenderness and that sweetness and that compassion to meet ourselves where we're at, not necessarily what someone else is telling us to do or preaching, because, you know, the advice at the time for me was either tube feeding or, you know, why try another, like, well, you haven't been really strict with a specific carbohydrate right. diet, or, you know, what about another candida diet, or even worse, the medical medium diet was recommended to me several times, which I did try and learned a lot when my teeth started to turn gray.
Oh God.
Yeah.
Why
but
did
I think
teeth start to turn gray?
When did they start to turn gray?
Why? You know?
So I was doing pure fruitarian because I was working with a practitioner at the time who I think very lovingly convinced me that that was the only way to rid my body of all the parasites that I did actually have. Mm-hmm. And I was so desperate to feel better and so desperate that, okay, this could be the one thing between me and feeling better. And I think it's just from the lack of vitamin K, the lack of fat soluble vitamins, the lack of protein. I was probably averaging, you know, 3 to 4 grams of protein a day just from bananas. I mean, think about it. You don't get much protein from fruit. So after, you know, 12 bananas, several handfuls of dates, some mangoes, you know, eating half a watermelon, you're still barely scratching the surface of even an infant would need for protein needs. Like it's, of course, it's crazy looking back, but in the moment it's like, all right, I'm going to do this and this, I'm going to give it my all. But yeah, and I was so out of it. I mean, clearly I was starving. My nervous system was just so fried from the lack of fat, from the lack of nutrition. It must have been about 2 months in where I realized, oh my gosh, my teeth are literally dissolving. It's, you know, part of the stress reaction too. If you're not consuming what your body needs to grow bone, you'll start dissolving your own bone to meet the demands. And yeah, that was definitely a wake-up call for me. I still pushed on for a little bit longer until I got to the point similar to you where I realized, oh my gosh, my quality of life, and not to mention my health, had plummeted and I was not enjoying it. I wasn't seeing results. In fact, I got sicker after 3 months of fruitarian. So yeah, that's when I shifted actually to a raw milk and eggs diet, which was not the best thing to do after only eating fruits. I think most of my enzymes had been completely shut down from just a lack of B vitamins and a lack of minerals, but it felt closer to where I needed to be. Something in me said, sweetie, you need some animal products. Just bananas and dates and mangoes are not going to cut it. So completely lost track of what you asked me. I think I was just responding to your story. Oh, yes. The chronic illness being more of an identity.
Yeah.
And even going about and moving through the world as a sick person, that I see that as another one of these ways that we are sending the wrong signal to our body. Because what I now understand is that if we are living as if we're a sick person. Our cells basically like, yep, okay, we're sick. You know, act sick. Like, don't repair, don't metabolize. Like, yeah, Teresa's saying I'm sick, act sick. When we start to question that and start to live and say, yeah, I've got symptoms still, or maybe I don't even have these symptoms, but I'm a healthy person and I'm getting healthier. It's closer to the truth. You know, it's, I think our bodies want to be well. Our bodies are constantly repairing and excreting and detoxing and trying to find balance. So it's one of those things that we might be holding ourselves back by thinking, oh, I have this diagnosis and that's just the way I am, or I have this infection and that's the way it's going to be. We can very skillfully use language to start to challenge that and therefore send a very different signal to our body. So yeah, similar for my journey, because I think we touched on this a little bit in the last one too. So everyone go back and listen if you want. But mm-hmm. for me, I wasn't able to ever clear the Lyme from my body. Every single time I would retest, years after the fact of when I first started down more of the Lyme healing journey, I'd still have positive test results. So I would still kind of, I would mostly kind of keep it a secret if I were making new friends. Like, I wouldn't be like, hey, I'm Teresa and I have Lyme disease, but yeah. It would come up in conversation. I would still introduce myself as, yeah, I have Lyme disease and that's part of my experience, until I got to the point of thinking similar to you, wait, why am I still gluing myself to being this sick girl? It doesn't line up with anyone who I want to be. And it's sending the completely wrong message to my body. I don't want them to think, yep, I'm the girl with Lyme disease and, you know, let those spirochetes stick around. You know, I want to be the girl or the woman, whatever, the person that had the infections and was able to clear them. That feels a lot better. That feels a lot more hopeful. And, you know, there's some murkiness in there, but a lot of it has to do with the story we're living out. How are we showing up? How are we, what's the energy we're giving off? And not to make it so mystical, but truly, what is the story we are literally acting out as we move throughout the day? And are we sending the signal that we want to our bodies as we do so?
Yeah, totally. I love how you put it. I love how you communicate. I love what you said about you have, so for those of us who don't know, does Lyme disease ever get cleared from the body?
It can. I mean, there's a lot of conflicting views. I feel like even Lyme experts disagree. Some people can have spirochetes in their body, test positive for Lyme and not have any symptoms. Other people, you know, might have 10, 12, 15, 20 years of Lyme coming up in tests. But, you know, I think at a certain point, and it'd be interesting to talk to other people in this, at a certain point, I had to remove myself from even the testing because it was playing psychological tricks on me, because every time I get that positive test back, it was another data point of hopelessness. And the story that my mind was telling me was, I'm going to be sick forever. I'm never going to heal. And even darker than that, well, this life isn't worth living if I'm going to be sick forever. And it really took me into a very dark and, you know, suicidal place. And that was not serving me. I mean, when we think about the heaviness of losing hope, it's so hard to mobilize any positive action when we're literally saying, you know, it's hopeless, it's useless, I'm useless, I can't, there's nothing left for me in this world. So yeah, it was actually when I stopped testing and said, you know what, I'm going to take a complete break from even thinking about Lyme disease, done. That's actually when I did shift into a more carnivore-based diet, because I was not doing well physically, but I needed a break from being around doctors. And that's slowly when things started to really transform. And similar to what you mentioned, some of the thoughts naturally transformed. It's not like I was tapping on them like, okay, maybe I can heal. I mean, I did a little bit of that, but some of it were more of these spontaneous moments of, you know what? Maybe I'm going to get through this. Maybe there is a reason to feel hopeful. Maybe like the thousands of others that have cleared it from their body and no longer deal with symptoms and no longer test positive, maybe I can be like one of them too. And it was what felt like more of this like pump up, but not in a fake bright siding positive thinking way, but in a way that genuinely felt open to the possibility, open to the fact that bodies are designed to heal. You know, whether we do anything or not, they are trying actively to always heal and repair. So yes, to answer your question, you can clear Lyme disease.
Okay. Yeah. No, I love the background of how it relates to you too, because I did the same exact thing with Candida, different specifics, but same general idea. I stopped getting tested. I never even really wanted to get tested for it in the first place, but I, you know, same as you, people recommend things. I went to a specialist, they wanted to do a stool test on me. And like the whole time I kind of just knew, like for me, I'm not like a sciencey person. I don't like really do much research online. I just do whatever like feels right for me. And that's kind of like my vibe. And that's also why I like having people like you that know a little bit more about like the technical like vitamins and stuff like that. It's cool to have you on because I think it makes a nice combo with how I think, because I don't look into anything, you know, much. I just like, okay, what feels, do I feel nourished? It's like super general for me.
It's very intuitive though. I bet you're getting exactly, you know, you've noticed I love to zoom into what, say, B vitamin is helping regenerate nerves and, you know, what activates certain enzymes in the body, what is sending a signal of safety to different autonomic parts of the brain. I love that. But I think intuitively, like we were touching on before we started recording, you're probably drawn to the foods that give you an abundance of those minerals and an abundance of those vitamins. And you know that they feel good because you feel better. And it's like, to me, that's the wisest way to approach food, because not to say we need to be ancestral, but before we knew anything about how, you know, our cells were functioning, anything about biology, there must have been a more intuitive approach. I mean, even just thinking about our ancestors knowing that liver and the organs were the most prized parts of a kill. And those are the parts that are filled with all of these essential minerals and vitamins that we struggle to get from other foods.
Yeah, for sure. I do believe that. I do believe that. And I know that your process too is intuitive. Like we have so many similarities too. But I like that you know, yeah, there's a lot you can teach me as far as all of that, the cell stuff, the science stuff, vitamin goes. So it's cool to hear about that. But yeah, there was something in me that was like, I don't really need to know what my stool test says in order to heal this thing. There was just something that felt that inside of me. Anyway, so I did the stool test. I got these supplements. I like didn't want to do the supplements. I like did them, but like didn't really feel differently. Nothing really changed. And I was like, whatever, I'm done. Like, I don't want to do this. So like at that point, nothing had changed in my health. And anyway, the point is, I learned when I did the GAPS diet. So like, also, I think it's cool to experiment with diets if you want to experiment with diets. Like, because for me, I know that I've done all the diets I wanted to do at this point in my life. But I did pick up things along the way. So like, I'll be talking to people, or how I like to receive information, you know, people will say stuff, or I'll see a post and I'll be like, oh, liver. Okay, let me try liver. And then I'm like, all right, sweet. So apparently there's a lot of vitamins in it. And then it's as simple as that, you know? So in the GAPS diet, I also learned that Candida is just like protecting our bodies from like stuff like heavy metals. That was their theory. And honestly, Teresa, like that was such a moment of me realizing, oh my God, it's not like I want the Candida to go away. Well, my body would die without Candida. It's supposed to be there. So I don't even know if you tested me, would my Candida come back, quote unquote, high? Maybe, but whatever. I don't care, because I don't have symptoms and I'm like feeling good. You know what I mean? And it's that simple for me.
And that's another amazing point where, with those stool tests, we've decided that we know exactly what the perfect microbiome looks like. Who's to say that someone might not be thriving and have a commensal balance of bacteria with a slightly elevated Candida level? I mean, I think there is a lot of There's a lot of money to be made on these tests, and I think there's a lot of uncertainty and people pretending that we know more about the microbiome than we do. Sure, there are certain pathogenic strains that we don't necessarily want.
Right.
Significantly overgrown, and if someone's having tons of symptoms, absolutely something to look into. But like you mentioned, the candida might be wisely stepping in to protect you. It's not this evil boogeyman that we've been trained to think. I mean, similar with a lot of the parasites, they sequester and gobble up heavy metals. They love damaged tissue. So it could be that, oh my gosh, you've been under significant stress. You've had environmental exposures from your past and you are ripe for these parasites, but they're actually helping you, because if they weren't in there gobbling up the heavy metals, that would be straight to your brain. And then there'd be some serious neurological issues. And of course, again, everything in balance. I think sometimes the parasites do get a little out of whack, but then we can start to think about, well, how is our lifestyle maybe out of whack, and how much is the parasites and how much is, I know we're both on computers, but our lack of time outside, our overabundance of blue light, we barely put our feet on the earth anymore. You know, our heads are down and we're staring at our phones all day, which sends a more of a stress signal to the nervous system. All these things that we might be blaming on candida or parasites could be something a much more foundational, which could be why both of us felt better when we stepped away from the testing and the protocols and started to just live more intuitively and really think about what feels good. When do I feel my best? What would the, if there were no limitations, how would I be feeding myself? What would my day look like? There's a lot of healing within that that has nothing to do with protocols. And I mean, nothing to do with a bottle of supplements or certain appointments. It's tuning into what feels right and following through with that.
100%. That was actually another thing, a huge like moment in that journey to just realize candida isn't a problem for me anymore. I wrote a list of the foods that I would want to eat, like in a perfect world. It's such a classic coaching thing. Like, I don't know if you also have experienced this, but you know, in the self-development coaching world, usually you see a coach and they're like, tell me about your dream life. And it's actually a great practice. That's why everyone uses it, including myself. What would you experience if you wanted, like, you start thinking about what do I actually want? And then you just realize, man, I would love to experience those foods again. And it's different for everyone. But for me, like after all this, at the end of the day, I was like, and after a lot of healing before this, but I was like, I don't care. I just want to live my life like this. And then come to find out this wasn't like too good to be true. It's like how I'm supposed to be living and what my body heals on. You know what I mean? And how amazing is that? It's crazy. Like, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. after so long of thinking and hearing that like the foods that are going to make you feel good, like don't really taste good, or they're like narrowed down, or it's just not what you really want, but they're supposed to be best for you. Like so many of us learn that. And like, probably for a lot of us, maybe we need that for a little bit or whatever, but it's so awesome to realize that it doesn't have to be that.
Exactly. And I think similar to what we've been touching on, if we're so excited to eat something, we're naturally in a low stress state. It's like that childlike awe and wonder. Yes, homemade pasta and fresh sourdough and butter and brownies for dessert. That gusto and excitement and enthusiasm is so much more in alignment with digestion versus, I'm really scared to eat anything. I'm scared of having a reaction. I'm scared of making my candida and Lyme disease worse. I better eat this because that's what my doctor told me to eat. I'm so sick of the GAPS diet, but I have to do it or I'm never going to heal. I can't think of a more stressful approach to food. So again, it's coming back to, really, it boils down to what's going on in the nervous system. And more often than not, our thoughts will tell us exactly what's going on in the nervous system. Do I feel unsafe? Do I feel rushed? Do I feel scared? Do I feel ashamed? Do I feel ugly? Do I feel unlovable? Those are all sending us a message of I'm not safe. I'm this, I can't relax. I can't just be with life. I can't eat this meal and joy. I better stay rigid and clenched and fearful. So it's so interesting to talk to people about, you know, you mentioned these are more early life experiences, and you got excited when I mentioned that's been more of a focus of mine, but it more often than not we'll get huge insights as to what might be driving someone's chronic illness or chronic infection or kind of mystery overlapping symptoms. They're aware that their thinking is a little bit stress-based. They're aware that they're not where they want to be. They're not close to living their ideal life. Their diet doesn't look close to the way they want it to, but they're not quite aware of the fact of how significant those early life experiences were, whether it was around food, the love they did or did not receive from caregivers, how they felt as kids that might still be showing up now as adults. So that's, I notice when things aren't budging and when people are not getting better, I kid you not, every single time there's something early on in life that still needs releasing, still needs addressing. And that can be kind of what frees people. And not to say it's like waving a magic wand, but I really think these memories, these traumas, these triggers, they get so stuck in us, and that we might get confused thinking, oh yeah, I have a candida infection, when really it's something, there's something so emotional, or, you know, it could be something like, I've heard this many times, I'm just different. I've always been different. I'm broken. And therefore, you know, I'm never going to feel better. So of course there's something interesting going on here. Well, maybe not of course, but I think it's interesting that those same people that are thinking I've always been different, I've always been broken, I'm, you know, nothing ever works out for me. How interesting that those people are dealing with very mysterious, overlapping, bizarre symptoms. And not to say it's their fault, but I think there's freedom in the problem. The answer almost lies in the problem. We start to think about, well, how might these symptoms be perpetuating based on what we are carrying in our bodies in more emotional ways?
Yeah, perfect. I wanted to get into this and segue into the early life trauma situation, because I don't think we talked about it much in the first episode. So you really dive into that with your clients. Can you talk to us about that?
Yeah, I think so. When I first started doing more chronic illness coaching, a lot of the times we'd be tapping on the frustration, the sadness, the fear, the anger, the loneliness, the complete overwhelm that comes with feeling awful, with not finding answers, with struggling to make it through the day because symptoms are so bad. And we'd get some relief. And I've been working with some clients actually since the very beginning, and they'd feel good for like a day, or maybe they'd feel good for a couple of days, and then boom, something would happen again. Or, you know, they'd get a significant flare up and they'd feel hopeless again. They'd feel angry again. They're feeling sad that, you know, their life is passing them by and they're bedbound, or they're, you know, not even close to what we would consider a functioning member of society. And the more I started to try and figure out, well, what helped me? What allowed me to get from a point of serious, really serious dysfunction to now not feeling limited by my body, not feeling limited by food, not feeling limited by illness? What's the difference? I had to look at some of the stuff that happened early on in my life. And I started to really unpack, okay, what are these core beliefs? Because again, even several years ago, if we had met, I was still operating under that story of there's something wrong with me. I've always been different. I came into this world different, and I'm never going to be well. And my body is just bound to be dysfunctional. I'm bound to be sick. All of these stories, not realizing I wasn't born that way. I absolutely was not born that way, but based on, and you know, no shame to my parents, they did the best they could, but based on my early life experiences and not really receiving the emotional connection, co-regulation that a child needs to thrive and develop and function normally and naturally, I had created this armor around myself. And it was basically this like protector, and parts work plays a lot into what I do now when I'm asking people these questions. But it's fascinating. Most people, you know, they think they're just upset and frustrated. And of course they are about their chronic illness symptoms. And then the more we start to dig, it's, you know, there's a deep grief, deep sadness, deep loneliness that goes back to when they were 5 years old. And, you know, their mom wasn't around to help them in the kitchen, or, you know, something someone said to them, or an outburst from their angry, abusive father always makes it feel like they have to be on guard or hypervigilant, so they can't relax ever. So they can't relax around food. And I think food is kind of sometimes an interesting extension, like our relationship with food. If we're operating under the story of life's hard, I'm different, I'm never going to be well, then food becomes this thing to manipulate, to be afraid of, to control. So, I mean, even just talking to some people with eating disorders, getting to the point in their journey where they realize it was never about the food. It was about trying to find a sense of control and safety in a world that felt overwhelming. So then we'll start to dive into and start tapping on maybe the first time they experienced feeling overwhelmed before they even consider themselves as a person with an eating disorder. The first memory of feeling overwhelmed. And really it's almost like opening, or I should say almost like digging into the dirt and like starting to pull out these roots, because on the surface level, we've got these symptoms maybe as the branches of this little cute tree, a little bush, whatever it is that's growing. Sure, we've got the symptoms and they're distracting, but then we also have the experiences. We have the events that happen to us. And then underneath in the soil is, whoa, okay, what are the core beliefs that are really keeping this rooted into the body? And how can we start to maybe free them? Not just pull them out and throw them away, but look at them, honor them, validate them, and really ask ourselves, okay, if these don't have to define me, if I don't have to keep being the person that is broken, if I don't have to keep being the outsider, if I don't have to keep being the one that's different, what is the actual true story that I want to tell? Because I would say those stories of it's useless, it's hopeless, I'm different, I'm broken, I'm sick, it always works out for them, but it's never worked out for me. Those are trauma responses. And most people wouldn't even realize it. They wouldn't even see how dysfunctional that is because they see the world through that lens. But when we start to realize, wow, these core beliefs are not anywhere close to the truth. They're just reactions to maybe a stressful early life experience or even stressful recent experience. Sometimes it doesn't hit people until they're 30s, 40s, you know, they've been healthy their entire lives and boom, something happens and, you know, they're not sure what to make of it. So for the majority of people, it is looking back into those key moments early in life, but there are the rare exception.
Yeah, for sure. I love this. I think it's so interesting. So working with early life trauma, that is something that you started doing this past year?
In terms of the questions I would ask, yes, because sometimes naturally in a session, like the closer I would get with specific clients, the more they would naturally open up to me. And, you know, we'd maybe start a call talking about some of their histamine reactions or some of the bloating or constipation or sleep issues they've been experiencing. And they'd start telling me about, you know, a sexual assault when they were 7 years old, or randomly they would talk about, and I hope this is okay to bring up on the podcast, I'm assuming it is, you know, it would remind them of a time, you know, where their dad attacked them and was kicking them on the floor. I didn't necessarily ask those questions. I didn't even plan to talk about that during the session, but it naturally came up. Their brain almost naturally wanted to go there in terms of, you know, we were talking about something and it reminded them of this. And it's just very interesting, but it also very intuitively makes sense to me that if something very scary or stressful happened to us, something huge, that capital T trauma, or maybe these small micro traumas, or just even neglect and abandonment that we experience from our caregivers, it would be silly to think that that doesn't leave a mark on the body. You know, we are such relational beings, and those early years and those teenage years are critical for our development of self-worth and our trust in our own capability and, you know, just all of these more, maybe more desirable characteristics. So if someone's lacking in them, yeah, that's when I really start to ask questions. So yeah, now that's, I try not to make assumptions, but if there is something that coming up or someone keeps having the same thought, I really very firmly and lovingly and gently turn back to, okay, let's go back to when you were younger. Let's fill me in on this a little bit. And it's amazing what comes up, what people have been through that they think was insignificant, you know?
Wow, that's so cool. It's amazing to hear how you're like expanding your practice with your clients, but also like the way that you're talking about it makes me feel like you've kind of been doing, I mean, you work with your clients on EFT tapping and you've been doing that for longer since I have found you. And that is emotional freedom technique for people who don't know. So it's already kind of in the emotional realm. So you are already doing technically kind of emotional work with your clients. And now you're just like, really, it sounds like you're really like honing in on what types of questions you can ask your clients and like what they might need and the specifics and types of coaching that you're doing. It's cool to see how that develops. And it's like, I think such a good example for like, yeah, like how our body's so intertwined. And it's one of those things that when you hear it, it just sounds like truth. Like you said, like obviously the physical body's connected to what's happening emotionally, because, and even if you want to get like scientific about it, like, okay, the nervous system, how about that? And the brain, you know, like all this is like the same thing, you know, it's just like, it's like, thoughts and emotions are like the same as like physical expressions. They're just like different types of expressions in different mediums. You know, like you have a thought, you have a movement. It's like the way I see it, it's like kind of the same thing, but expressed differently. Do you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So it's cool. It's cool to see that, like how that's like developing for you. And that was a question that I really wanted to ask you today. Like what has changed, what has developed since we last talked? And
a big piece of it. And to add to that, Emily, actually,
yeah,
just even realizing, I think a lot of the chronic illness world, it's like, okay, I have to heal my body and I have to do it and I'm going to figure it out. And I'm going to find the right people. I'm going to hire the right people. I'll do the diets and I'm going to figure it out and I'm going to heal. And there's like that intensity behind it. But another recent shift is more and more people, I think the more work and healing that they do, start to want to really refine the relational aspects of their lives. And, you know, they'll start to open up about, you know, struggles they're having being single or struggles they're having with their partner, dealing what comes up, feeling chronically unwell and how that lands on their partner and the challenges, the unique challenges that come up there. So that's honestly been another, I'd say one of my favorite things about really getting to know someone is when I get to understand more about how is this impacting their ecosystem and when they want to actually show up differently and not be such a drain, because I think there's a necessary part of the healing process where we naturally become a little bit selfish, you know, I have to feel better. And we forget that us feeling better is actually dependent on still being connected to other people and taking care of other people. And that's kind of ironic thinking that actually sometimes the healing comes when we learn to be a little less selfish and start to help others instead. And we get this, maybe it's a dopamine boost, maybe it's a healthy dissociation from being so consumed by our own suffering. But I think the fastest way to feel better more often than not, no matter how sick or tired someone is to do something nice for someone else, whether that's a loved one, a family member, a stranger. And who knows, maybe we'll never be able to measure it. And I don't know if that's even important, but coming back to how we fit in and how we can still be of service, how we can still help someone else, I think is a critical piece of healing. Maybe more important than, not more important, equally as important as diving into some of these childhood stories.
For sure. I love that. It's really beautiful. Definitely seen it in my own life. And what's like coming up for me right now as you're saying this is like, I feel like it's so much about identity. I wanted to note that in our first episode, I remember saying to you, because is cool. When you came on this podcast initially, I was just kind of closing down with my like first or second go at like the food freedom vibes. Like, you know what? I'm pretty sure it's all about mindset. I'm just gonna like eat whatever I want and like let's see what happens. And like that worked for a little bit, which is crazy. I did like a really giant lifestyle shift from like the GAPS diet to like eating at restaurants all the time. And it like actually worked for a little bit, which is so interesting how mindset works and how that plays into like just like the overall day-to-day mindfulness that's required to establish like lifelong beliefs, you know? Like it just takes time, it can take persistence. Anyway, but that it kind of wasn't feeling like it was working anymore, and now I know why. But right at that time is when you came on the podcast, and I remember saying, because we were talking about these topics, I'm like, yeah, a lot of this, it really makes sense to me. And then I was just like, do you think it's just about mindset, Teresa? And you were like, not fully, but like mostly, like not, I think you said like 90 something percent. It's often mindset or like, you know, what you're thinking, what your thought process is, it is, and how that also relates to trauma and all the emotional stuff too. Like what's happening in the brain? How are you feeling? And so now like we have both learned even more about that topic a year later, and I'm starting to realize how much identity has to do with what shows up in our lives and how the world shows up for us. So we've already talked about it a little bit, like, you know, if you see yourself as a sick person, that's kind of how life kind of turns out for you one way or another. Maybe you feel better temporarily, but you always baseline is always I'm sick. And that's how reality shows up for you. But yeah, something I learned in my journey, just listening to you say that, you know, people start to want to help others when they go through this healing journey and they want to start to look a little bit outwards and focus on other things and develop other parts of their lives because, like, that's also health. You know, I started in connection and community, that's also health. You start to realize that. And I think for me personally, it had to do so much with like the healing led to me seeing myself as a different person. Like, oh, I'm actually not though, just a selfish person. Like that's not who I am, you know? So like, and I think like people see themselves often as selfish. Cause I think we like get told that a lot when we're younger or we get kind of pressured by society to believe that for taking some time to ourselves. So then we take on that identity and it's like, well, then it just has to be about me because I am a selfish person, you know? And then you start to do the emotional healing and then you realize, oh my God, I'm not. And then you're like, wait, I'm not a selfish person. So actually I do want to go out and help other people or look outside of myself. I just think that's so cool. Like in a way it simplifies all this health stuff down so much. Like how am I viewing myself? Who do I think I am? And that's like that. I just think that has so much to do with the realities we live in, you know?
Yeah. I mean, even as you were talking just now, I was even thinking, like, even over my winter break, I took some time off and just even noticed I had some days where I was just so at peace, just completely at peace, watching the snow, the sun was pouring in. So excited to meet up with a friend or to go to a potluck. And even just with that realization of, wow, my entire narrative has changed. I'm no longer this miserable, worthless, useless invalid. I'm connected. I'm excited. I am valued and I value the people around me. And it was just such a moment of extreme contrast. And again, realizing, oh my gosh, yes, I was sick, but how much sicker was I because I was attacking myself. I mean, the thoughts that used to run through my head and I'm sure you too, and maybe I'd say almost, yeah, everyone I work with comes to me with some kind of really intense, serious bully-like narrative and starting to shift that and release that. And then it opens up space to want to connect because I'd say even the most introverted people, we want to feel better. Not so that we can just feel better and be completely alone. We want to feel better so that we can do fun things and be of service and maybe be creative and make use of this life in a way that feels meaningful. And that includes interacting and being with others. So when we can almost bring that in from the beginning, I think it can almost offer this shortcut to helping people heal, because they even get data points. Like a big one actually that I've heard many times is people with very real and very significant food intolerances, where, you know, they'll eat something and they will feel awful. And this is even after doing some brain work where they were excited, they're telling their body, okay, I can digest whatever I eat and I'll release what I don't. I'm trusting my body. I can do this. They're ready. They're ready to take in whatever. And maybe they eat something seemingly benign and get really, really sick. Those people have noticed that when they're out doing something fun, like I call it the potluck effect, they don't have the same food reactions. And they maybe even feel fine eating more freely or less high quality food, less perfectly balanced meal, but something about the joy and the connection of being around friends or family members is enough to put the body in such a healing state. So little data points like that can be really, yeah, just helpful along the healing path, where people realize, oh, I actually feel worse staying home eating the perfect grass-fed steak and sauteed collard greens than I did having, you know, sunflower oil chips and guac and random side dishes at a friend's house, and I actually felt fine the next day. What explains this? Ah, the nervous system. Coming back to the nervous system, safety, joy, play, connection, isolation, seriousness, rigidity. And it's about, yeah, choosing to act in ways that line up with the life that you want to live and the identity that you want to be creating, if we have to create an identity, which I'd say, you know, it's helpful to have at least an idea of who we want to be, not saying that's who we actually are. And we could, you know, I'm sure someone listening to this could be pulling this apart in many ways, but really just thinking, okay, well, how do I want to move through this world? What's the imprint I want to leave? How do I want people to feel when they're around me? What's the energy I want to give off when I walk into a room? Those things can be so impactful.
For sure. Yeah, I love that. I saw evidence of the potluck effect when I started doing diets. I'm not going to go into a big story about what I experienced in my health, because there's so many episodes where I talk about this, but I didn't have like horrible digestive issues. I had like weird mystery illness, kind of like low grade health stuff, and like not great digestion, but not like horrible bedridden stuff. So like, it was so interesting to get into the health world and start like, quote unquote, what I thought was making my diet better by like just eating a grass-fed steak instead of like eating like other types of foods. And then my digestive symptoms got worse. I was like, wait, now I'm having problems that like I didn't have before. And then later on in the health world, I realized that some people describe that as like detox, which was like, can be really dangerous for people to think like, oh, well, it's just detox. Like I'm feeling way worse than before, but like eventually it'll go away. Like I heard some really scary stories about like, obviously like people ending up in the hospital, but like you don't hear about them anymore because they're like not doing well. So they're not like posting online, you know? So it's like a crazy phenomenon that happens in the diet world. But I will say that the whole detox vibe did help me with my food mentality, in the sense of like, sometimes I'm just having symptoms and like, I'm just going to trust that my body's handling it. And like, that's part of the process. Like, it's okay. And then like, you know, and it's always like a spectrum. Like, yeah, that's why I think you can't go wrong by getting in touch with your intuition, because when you learn to really trust yourself and read signs, and you'll know when to say like, yeah, maybe my body's just handling something. I have like, you know, I'm breaking out. My body's just handling something and like, it'll go away soon. And then it can just be that simple for me, I noticed often. So I wanted to mention that, because that was such a big moment of like, wow, I think I'm eating healthier, but eating is becoming a less enjoyable experience. It's becoming like a less comfortable experience. Why is this? You know, like I just think that's so interesting. And what I was going to say after that kind of went out the window, but if it is meant to come back to me, it will. I just think that, yeah, it's so important for us to take a look at I know what I was going to say. Hold on. I'm going to pause what I was just saying there. The identity thing. I think we're getting like pretty deep here, but like, I think identity is just like realizing that you're not bad. You know what I mean? Because I feel like we're all of the personality traits. We just like express them differently and have like different parts of each personality trait, right? But like the big work for me as far as identity goes was like just realizing that I'm not like a bad person. I'm not the bad stuff. Like I experience uncomfortable feelings, but like I'm not bad, I'm not broken. That was like the journey for me. And like it can also just be that too, you know? Like you mentioned that people are probably like, what the fuck is, you know, what identity thing and what does that even mean? And also like it's that whole you could go really deep into this and be like, are we anything? Are we everything? Like what are we nothing? Are we everything? But like also I think that the healing stuff is just realizing that like you're so much more than like the criticism you say to yourself, you know?
Yes. And Emily, I'm glad that you brought that up because when I start to see people really make huge strides on their healing journey, they're being nice to themselves. They're cheering their own body on. And like you mentioned, they might still have a reaction and they say, okay, body, I trust you to keep processing what you need to, or they might even be able to laugh it off. Like, yeah, wow, that was an intense reaction, body. Okay. We'll take a break from gluten for a little bit and come back to it in a couple weeks. Thanks for letting me know you're not ready for it. But their whole relationship to their body is different. It's not, it's less about I'm broken. There's something wrong with this body. I hate this body. It's useless. It's okay. My body's doing its best. It's yeah, there's this complete turn. And like you said, it's realizing, oh, there maybe wasn't anything ever wrong, other than the fact that we thought we were wrong, we thought we were broken, we thought we were dysfunctional. Our bodies are just trying to rebalance.
Yeah, 100% for sure. I agree. And yeah, I was saying when I stopped myself mid-sentence, I was just saying, yeah, I just think we can't lose by doing the trauma healing stuff. Like we really can't lose. I'm sure that there are some people who are like not in the state to do trauma healing stuff, and it's not like you have to like bust your ass all the time 24/7 or anything. But like I was just talking to some of my friends about chronic illness, like they're experiencing also low grade stuff, and I'm just like, you know what, if you feel like totally paralyzed by options like diet options and practitioner options and like healing yourself options, one really great thing that like you can't really lose with as long as you're feeling like stable enough psychologically is just going through and writing down what's coming up for you emotionally and doing some of that like understanding work about what's going on inside your brain and what you're telling yourself and like kind of like what you're saying you talk about with clients, like, oh, this thing keeps coming up for you. Okay, what does that lead to? What does that remind you of? And
Yes.
working through that, you can't, like I said, as long as you do feel mentally stable enough, you cannot lose with that. You know,
Yeah.
now we're learning that. I think that that kind of stuff has way more power than even you and I realize right now, than like anyone on earth realizes right now. You know, it's like such magical stuff.
Well, even before I started asking or diving more into the early life stories, if it wasn't coming up naturally, I was witnessing and experiencing, it's not me doing it. I'm there to facilitate, but I mean, ultimately, the person I'm working with is being open to change. But sometimes it was as simple as, like you said, just acknowledging exactly where they're at. And, you know, like I'm frustrated and I feel broken and I feel hopeless and I'm feeling like I'm never going to heal and it's making me really sad and really angry. And we just tap on that for 15 to 20 minutes, not doing anything too special. We're just honoring exactly what's coming up, everything that's coming up, and just giving space. I'm allowed to feel overwhelmed. I'm allowed to feel sad. I'm allowed to feel jealous of the healthy people that can eat whatever they want and do whatever they want while I'm stuck at home researching the next cure. I'm allowed to feel frustrated. That right there, that just validation and honesty, that sometimes is enough for someone. And then naturally, it's kind of wild. A new insight will just pop up, or they'll want to start to talk about something else. But it starts with, yeah, being fully and completely honest with where they find themselves. And then from there, we can see what's going to naturally come up, or what could use a little bit more intentional work. But like you said, we don't have to grind at this every single day. There's a time and place to pause. There's a reason we're not in therapy all day, every day. That would no longer be therapeutic, but there is something to be said about maybe once a week or once every other week, processing, releasing, acknowledging, and giving space for that emotion to move, or many emotions.
Exactly. Probably many emotions. Yeah. I totally agree. I totally agree. And I think it's impossible to it's just not sustainable to do anything all the time, 24/7, you know? So yeah, I love that. And I think it's so important too. Like, so many people, I think, wouldn't even know where to start with like the trauma healing stuff. And also, it's such a big term, right? Like, trauma healing sounds so big to me. Like, it just sounds like a big thing. And like, it doesn't have to be, but I think we can always like learn from other people. And so that's why like your job is really important. And I think it's huge, like for the nervous system, like for neurotransmitters and for just like mindset and like spiritual health. I think it's so important to learn from someone who has done it before you. Like, it's like they say it's like the 4-minute mile, you know, like once you see that somebody else, like, oh, there's Teresa. She has gone through this process. She was bedridden. It was pretty like much rock bottom for you health wise and diet wise. And now here you are experiencing food freedom. Oh, she did that. I can do it too. That in itself is such a big, important thing, I think, in our journeys.
Yes. And that was one of the, actually hearing about someone else's success story. I'm not sure if you're familiar with Christina Rice. She actually was living about 10 minutes from me back in San Diego. And I was Googling, I think I was like Googled like SIBO, Lyme, like extreme weight loss, organ dysfunction, like just a random Google search. And she popped up and I listened to a podcast interviewing her, and her story was so similar to mine. So similar, being gaslit by doctors, not finding healing. And it was knowing that she had made it through that gave me something to cling on to, because that was truly when I was at rock bottom. And I even remember the look on my husband's face where he was like, wow, we need to reach out to this woman. And I mean, seriously, I think the work I did with her was extremely helpful in just realizing, okay, healing is possible. She's living proof that it's possible. And just finding those other people to get inspired by, again, back to that interconnectedness, we're not alone in this. Find those data points of hope, the possibility that healing is possible, so that even when you doubt that it's possible, those case studies are still going to be there to maybe convince your brain, hey, hang on, keep trying things, maybe try something different, maybe drop the diets for a bit and do what Emily did and eat out and find a new balance for the time being, and then shift when you get another, maybe a pull in another direction to change things. But yeah, there's so much to be said about letting the world inspire you, and those success stories, or I shouldn't even call them success stories, but stories of recovery. I mean,
yeah,
they're inspiring. They feel good to know that it's possible.
For sure, for sure. And I think, and also just leading back to mindset, like plain and simple, if you see that somebody has worked their way to a place that you would like to be, you're going to likely believe, and I'm sure you could say it can be way more complicated than this sometimes, but often like we believe like, okay, I see Teresa and I'm like, Teresa has overcome her candida imbalance, and she, a big practice was EFT tapping. What? EFT tapping doesn't involve food or diet. How is that possible? But she did it. Okay, so then I'm going to believe, if I work with Teresa, that because she healed, I'm going to try her methods, I'm going to heal too. And it's like that simple. And like Teresa has a bunch of also science to back up like why her methods work. But for people like me, that's the stuff that heals me. If I believe it's going to work, if it feels good to me, if I'm inspired by it.
Well, I think, yeah, again, back to the science, we know that the power of belief is huge. The placebo effect is huge, in the same way that the nocebo effect is huge, in the sense you probably heard of this study where they give people sham chemotherapy and without doing anything to their bodies, just the belief that something harmful was happening to them caused their hair to fall out. Those people weren't getting anything. It basically, you know, a sugar pill. I mean, sugar chemo, whatever you want to call it. But I think it works in both directions. So if we want to give our bodies the best possible chance, choose the direction that feels more uplifting versus choosing the direction that feels hopeless. And no shame. I think hitting rock bottom is helpful in the sense that eventually you get tired of feeling hopeless. I mean, that's a hard place to be when there's no reason to live. It's so dark. It's so small. I remember the color when I look out through my own eyes, the color of the world felt sepia. It felt gray. It felt lifeless. I think there's something in the brain, or at least this is what I experienced, that didn't want to settle for that. As painful as it was to be very sick, it didn't want to settle for, okay, well, I'm just going to live out my last couple months like this. This is how I'm going to go. Wait a second. What about the other people? What about this random girl that lives down the street that has overcome very similar conditions and now is thriving in her own coaching business? Fascinating. So yeah, another reason to choose hope.
So true. So true. And like, I know we talked about on our first episode, like, yeah, feeling hopeless, feeling like, there's no answers for me, and that whole, and then also, even if you do learn a little bit about like the nervous system and all that, you're like, okay, great. So my mindset sucks, and that's keeping me sick too. That's just another thing that's like keeping me broken. And it's such a good reminder that like despair can like lead us to amazing things. It's not like I want to chase after despair, but being a human means experiencing that sometimes, all the different emotions, and that can lead us to like really great experiences too, you know. Mm-hmm. So if you're feeling mm-hmm. that right now and you're listening, you have a bright future to look towards.
Even when you doubt it, because I think a lot of people are like, yeah, right, bullshit. I've been sick for so long and nothing's working. And I think even when you doubt it, the body still can heal. Not to say you have to find hope or possibility. Sometimes just saying, yeah, I feel like a piece of shit. I feel awful. I feel hopeless. And I'm honoring that that's how I feel right now, fully, honestly. That might be the stress relief you need. And then it might turn into, and I want to feel better and I'm scared I'm not going to heal. And that's why I'm really upset right now. So there's a lot to unpack there. But what were you going to say?
Yeah, I love it. You always make that point too. You did that on the first episode as well.
I did.
Like, yeah. And it's important. Like, you know, there are people that don't want to hear that like bright future. What are you talking about? But also, I'm going to say my part too. You're listening, our listeners who might be feeling that way, you're listening to two people who have felt that way before, and now we don't. So there's two mm-hmm. pieces of evidence for you, you know?
Yes.
Okay. Teresa, I would love to hear about what it's like to work with you these days and the journey that you take your clients on.
Oh, thanks for asking. So everyone is different. I think a lot of people reach out again in more of the general chronic illness camp. They've got skin issues, gut issues, sleep issues, kind of the trifecta, mood issues, energy issues, and they're just overwhelmed. They don't know what to do. They are scared of foods because they are pretty reactive. They're exhausted from protocols. So, I mean, the first step is bringing in a sense of safety. And initially I like to work with people pretty closely. I don't make any rules. I'm not here to say, this is how it works. You have to meet with me every week. But I'd say building the momentum when someone's in a very fragile place, like we just touched on, it can be helpful to have a little extra support of someone that has felt that way too, that knows exactly how scary it can be to feel hopeless and isolated and like our bodies are failing us. And then over the course of time, again, it changes. I mean, some people I've been working with for going on four years now, and we no longer really talk about chronic illness stuff. And like I mentioned, we're talking more about their dreams, their hopes, their relationships, maybe things that they're still aspiring to and wondering how they can pursue it, but noticing they have limiting thoughts or self-doubt that needs addressing. Fascinating to see that when they're not so bogged down with just survival and symptoms, things start to expand. And then other people come to me with a very specific focus. You know, they might have a very specific goal in mind. Like several people have come to me with weight loss. You know, they know there's some emotional thing. They're upset with their bodies. They firmly believe they're never going to lose weight. They have a deep belief that weight loss is hard. Some of them have really hated exercise, but feel like they need to push through in order to lose the weight. So it's been interesting working more in that focus camp, because just like we touched on, it always opens up to something bigger. You know, it always opens up to, oh, actually, yeah, when I was little, I never had time to play and I always had to do things this way. And I never could make my own choices. And my mom was always telling me what to do. And fascinating to start to unpack, wait a second, what we thought was a weight loss and body image issue is actually more about self-trust and freedom, and has, yes, there's still that maybe desire to aesthetically change their body and feel a little bit more like themselves, but the emotional story is a huge piece of it. So yeah, and I work with people anywhere from a short-term container, really focusing on what they are wanting to shift, and then sometimes a really long-term container and just letting that evolve. And I enjoy it all. I mean, I absolutely fall in love with specific clients, and, you know, it feels like I really get to know them and love them. And it's both heartbreaking and amazing for me to get to the point where they're like, Teresa, I'm feeling great. I'm eating out at restaurants. I sleep through the night. I'm not afraid to live my life anymore. Like, I think I'm good, you know. And sometimes I'll hear from them like a year later and they just want to touch base on something else, but they're not living as chronically ill. Or similarly, with someone that comes to me with a very focused problem, we get to the point where they're like, wow, I'm feeling pretty good. Like, I think I'm ready to take a pause from sessions. And that's my goal. My business model is not built on stay sick forever so that you can keep tapping with me. Because the world benefits when people are feeling better, doing what brings them joy, getting out, adding to the world, adding music, adding art, adding liveliness, kindness. And I think everyone deep down knows that. So if we can create more of that, and not to make this, you know, all love and light, but if we can really allow people to feel better, people naturally want to contribute. When people are feeling good, people want to use their lives well. So it's kind of amazing for me to just feel like I get to pay it forward a little bit, because when I look back to when I was feeling my absolute most hopeless and most depressed and most scared, I just, like you said, I just needed proof that if I kept hanging on, that one day life would look different. And it looks drastically different. I'm a much different person. I look different. I feel different. I think differently. I mean, I'm just drawn to very different things. It's kind of like a personality change, or maybe revealing my true personality in a way. Not to make that about me, but yeah.
No, and again, like, I think it's important for people to know that all of that has changed for you, and it's been that type of process for you. It's good, as you say, like, it's good for people to know that, you didn't always have like an amazing mindset towards life. We just assume that everyone's been the way that they are forever, and they're perfect, you know, and it's not true. So.
Yeah, I used to get kind of upset, and even I'd get upset, irritated, and very jealous of positive people, or people that just wake up in a good mood and are excited about the day and, you know, moderately healthy or healthy enough to live a rich life. I used to be so, I thought they were faking it, Emily, until I realized, oh my gosh, I'm upset because I wish I had that level of ease. And then realizing, well, I can too. I don't have to be jealous. I can cheer them on and realize, if that's something I want, I can absolutely make space for that. And I think a lot of people, whether they're feeling confused or hopeless or stressed or overwhelmed or stuck or just completely uncertain as to what to do, whether it's about their health, their career, their whatever it is that's coming up, just knowing that things pass, things shift, things change, and you might be shocked that even a year from now you'll look back and say, wow, Okay, that was awful, but thank goodness I went through that because it allowed me to develop these qualities. And here I am now, grateful to be alive and excited about what I get to spend my time doing and the people I get to talk to, all of these things that make life feel just richer.
Oh, I love you. You're you're just a great person to talk to. And I know that all of that translates so well as a coach. You're like a very safe person. So the people that hate toxic positivity, sorry, but I'm just like, yeah, I'm really glad you came on. And you guys definitely, definitely check Teresa's content out. I'm telling you, I think it's really life changing. It has changed my life and has contributed so much to my success for health. And yeah, Teresa, what's your favorite way for people to contact you and to see your content?
Yeah, I'm most active on the Living Roots Wellness Instagram site, but I do all my scheduling either through the messaging or email, teresa@livingrootswellness.com. But yeah, I'd say that's the easiest. And oh, I didn't even mention for people that are like, oh, I don't know about this tapping, emotional stuff. I'm kind of curious, but I don't know if I want to work closely with someone. I did start an app where I add a new video every single week. And I do community calls there. So a lot of people just want to, you know, kind of tap on their own and maybe work through some of the emotional things at their own pace or come to a community call and, you know, keep their computer screen off, keep their microphone off and just listen. You don't necessarily have to do like a one-on-one intensive container. I see the benefit and I personally love being able to kind of dig deeper with someone, but there are so many ways to make this your own. And eventually it's nice to see people just, you know, kind of taking kind of what you're doing, picking and choosing what feels right and making it their own and tapping. I mean, tapping is a self-help tool. I want people to take it and run with it. Great. Once you get a sense of how it works, you don't need a coach to walk you through it. Sure. Sometimes it's nice to have just that connection. We all need that at certain points. But sometimes it's nice to be the one to uplift ourselves or to comfort and reparent ourselves. And tapping is just another tool for that.
Love it. Love it. We'll have all of that Teresa just talked about linked up in the show notes for you guys. Teresa, Piela, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate you here.
Likewise. Great conversation as always, Emily.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Do me a huge favor and share this episode with someone who you think may need it or may get something out of it. Share it on social media. Help me get the word out about these empowering health topics. It changes lives to do that. We have awesome people on this podcast, and I talk about things that have really like made my life so much better. As long as you have a smartphone, this information is free to everybody. So get that word out. Let's make a change in the health world. I would really, really appreciate that. Thank you again for listening. I love you. I'll see you next time.